Good day and welcome to the Ofwat PR14 Final Determinations Investor and Analyst Call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Johnson Cox. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you and good morning, everybody. As you know, it's a big day today for Ofwat and for all the water and wastewater companies. This morning, we published the final determinations for 18 companies. And in a moment, Sonia, our Chief Regulation Officer, will take you through the detail from this morning's announcement. I'm going to first make a few short, brief comments. I'm also sorry that our Chief Executive, Catherine Ross, is not on the call with us today, but she's currently in the BBC studios in interviews. I'm pleased that Ofwat has achieved what we set out to do. That was a review on schedule and also a review run differently from previous ones. We wanted to push water companies to own their business plans and to engage in a meaningful relationship with their customers. For the first time, in pushing companies to develop those plans in line with needs and priorities of customers, this price review has seen an unprecedented level of customer engagement, over 250,000 individual customer contacts. As a result, the business plans are better aligned with the needs and interests of customers, society and the environment, as well as investors. Throughout the price review, we at Ofwat had wanted to bring the company focus back to taking their businesses to the frontier of efficiency and customer service. We had been worried that financial outperformance derived from capital structures more highly leveraged than our notional structure may over recent years have blunted the incentive to improve operating efficiency. So we've pushed all companies to reach the 2013 upper quartile standard of performance by setting incentives and penalties. These will allow up to a 2% gain on the regulated equity for the best performing companies. There are some 500 performance commitments across the sector, that's the total number for all companies, and two-thirds of those have strong financial incentives and penalties. That will help companies who really want to move the frontier forward. We also believe that companies who produce exemplary business plans, making tough choices themselves, should be fast-tracked for our enhanced status. South West Water and Affinity Water have been held harmless against our reduction in WACC. I know that few industry commentators expected those companies to reach the enhanced status, and the fact that those did, and others who may have been predicted by commentators to do so, didn't, introduces some of the disruptive changes that happen in competitive markets. As an economic regulator, our job is to promote some of this competitiveness. So those are a few opening comments from me, and I'd like to hand over to Sonia, who will take you through the finer details of today's FD announcement.
Thanks very much, Johnson. PR14 is all about companies being challenged to deliver more for less. Over the 2015 to 20 period, average bills for water and wastewater customers in England and Wales will be 5% lower than in the past 5 years. Companies will spend more than £44 billion over the next 5 years. This investment will deliver improvements in areas of service that really matter to customers, including households being at lower risk of sewer flooding and cleaner water at beaches. PR14 has not been about the lowest possible prices today at the expense of future generations, and we have ensured regulatory consistency by honouring the commitments that were made in the past, something which I know is very important to this audience. But before we get into the specifics, I would like to take this opportunity, which I know Johnson and Catherine with the rest of the leadership team echo, to give our thanks to all stakeholders that have engaged with us in this process. We consider it to be a strong foundation to build trust and confidence in the sector. Moving on to the specifics. First, we should recognise again the achievement of our two enhanced companies that Johnson has already mentioned. South West Water and Affinity Water. As expected, their final determinations today are substantially unchanged. This is consistent with our commitment. At PR19, I hope that more companies will have the confidence to step up to the challenge of delivering plans that clearly stand out from their peers. These companies are already at work delivering their plans, which should deliver significant practical benefits. They've received direct financial benefits as a result of the upfront award, £11 million to South West Water and £5 million to Affinity, and they also have the promise of a larger share of any TOTEX outperformance. They have also not been affected by other changes to the risk and reward package, including on ODIs and the cost of capital. Preserving the cost of capital is worth £14 million to South West Water and £5 million to Affinity Water. Moving on to the headline change for all other companies, the cost of capital. Our updated appointee cost of capital is 3.74, down from 3.85 at the guidance in January and from 5.1 set at PR09. In January, we took an unusual step in setting out our view on the cost of capital as part of our overall assessment of risk and reward. This felt like a brave decision. This has delivered substantial benefits to customers, and we have observed that having this knowledge has been valuable to stakeholders. However, we were clear at the time and again in August that providing early guidance did not mean that we would ignore subsequent market evidence and regulatory precedents. Let me briefly explain how we got to an 11 basis points reduction. On the cost of new debt, we have taken account of the latest market evidence. We have seen real yields on corporate debt indices fall from just over 2% in January to below 1.5% by the end of October, a decline of between 50 and 70 basis points. Yields have moved even more in recent weeks. Applying our assumption that borrowing costs during the period will average 60 basis points higher than they currently are, our significantly lower starting point means that we have reduced our cost of new debt to 2% pre-tax real from 2.65% in January. We allow a further 10 basis points for issuance costs. On the cost of equity, we've looked carefully at both the falling risk-free rate and important regulatory precedents from the last 12 months. We have kept the cost of equity at 6.75, the same as in the risk and reward guidance. We consider that this was the right level within an overall package of risk and reward for these price controls, but we could have taken another view. In particular, the Competition Commission, in its final decision on Northern Ireland electricity, confirmed that it saw the upper limit for the total equity market return as 6.5%. Ofgem and the CAA responded to this by changing their positions down to 6.5 and 6.25, respectively. A 65 basis points decline in the cost of new debt translates into the 11 basis points decline in the WACC, bringing our appointee vanilla WACC to 3.74. At the wholesale level, this means that the starting allowed return is 3.6%. Overall, our interventions on the cost of capital have saved customers over £2 billion. On company-specific uplift, previously known as the small company premium, for the FD, we have not changed our position at draft determination. We have allowed uplift of 15 basis points for Portsmouth and Bournemouth Water, where they showed higher cost of raising debt, and we demonstrate that they provide benefits to customers as efficient wholesale comparators that more than offset this. Customers will see a benefit of £70 million as a consequence of our interventions in this area. As Johnson has already highlighted, PR14 will see a return to the focus on operational performance. So running through these from small to large. First, the Service Incentive Mechanism, SIM, has been a strong driver in improving the standards in the past and will remain so in this period. For those that are at the leading edge, there will be rewards. For the rest, it is right to return money to customers for poor service and returns will be lower. Outcomes and their associated delivery incentives are one of the most important innovations of PR14. Companies have been given considerable freedom in developing the outcomes that matter for their customers, and we have challenged companies hard to make sure that there is genuine customer support and that the outcomes are sufficiently challenging. We confirm today, for example, that for all non-enhanced companies, we are retaining the upper quartile challenge for the five most common and comparable outcomes. The incentives will align investor and customer interests. On average, companies see 60 basis points of potential upside and 170 basis points of downside from the ODIs in their final determinations, which is broadly in line with draft determinations. A few things can be said about this balance. First, the imbalance is not universal. South West Water, as at its draft determination, has a broadly balanced ODI range, with 1.4% of upside and 1.7% of downside. This reflects the excellent customer engagement and broad support that they achieved for their plan. Anglian, Severn Trent, Thames and Wessex all see the potential for 80 or 90 basis points of upside. Second, some of the largest individual ODIs are around the delivery of major schemes, and these ODIs are negatively skewed by their nature. For example, Severn Trent has ODIs associated with the delivery of their Eland Valley scheme. They will pay customers £16 million for every year that the resilience scheme is delayed, or £360 million if they fail to deliver. For the first time, these incentives reflect both returning the costs to customers and the benefits that have been lost. ODIs are a new approach for Ofwat and indeed for any UK regulator. To help the transition for the non-enhanced companies, we have put in place the protection of a soft cap and collar on ODIs overall. This means that ODIs won't contribute or detract more than plus or minus 2% of RORE on average over the period. ODIs on major schemes such as the EVA or UU's Felmere Link sit outside the cap. This brings us on to TOTEX's out or under performance. PR14 has introduced menu regulation into the water sector. Importantly, customers will share in the winnings if companies manage to lower their costs. You will see from the final determinations that companies have implied menu choices which range from 92 to 105, with Bristol sitting outside at 130. The menu choice setting sharing arrangements between companies and customers for TOTEX performance. The company's exposure will range from 44%, 49% excluding Bristol, and 57%. Companies will have until the 16th of January to make a final decision on their menu choices, with a true-up for any differences at the end of the period. This approach is designed to reveal valuable information that will be critically important in the future as companies will be asked to deliver more for less again. As companies respond to these incentives and root out inefficiencies, they will help us to set even more challenging benchmarks at future price reviews. On average, companies will see 1.5 to 2% of potentially the RORE upside and downside for their share of TOTEX out and under performance after sharing with customers, which is broadly in line with our risk and reward guidance. Clearly, some companies have different starting points than others. Some companies' business plans assume costs below our threshold, while others above. This is not reflected in the notional RORE stacks, but clearly could affect the likelihood that actual companies out or underperform. Having talked about the scope for out or underperformance, let me give you an overview of where we have landed on wholesale costs, of obvious importance as these represent 90% of the value chain. We've talked about how important the move to TOTEX is for the sector. The move to TOTEX should open up the scope for improvements in cost efficiency as companies optimise across capital and operating expenditure. Over time, it will also support the delivery of more innovative solutions that will lower costs. At draft determination, the company's plans were 2% above our threshold in water and 5% above in wastewater, a total gap of $1.5 billion. At final determination, companies' plans are almost exactly in line with the thresholds in both water and wastewater, a gap of only £18 million across the TOTEX programme of over £40 billion. At draft determination, we highlighted United Utilities Wastewater Control, Thames' share of Tideway Tunnel, and Bristol Water as having the most material gaps. All of these have reduced to different extents and for different reasons. At UU, a wastewater gap of £773 million, 29%, has fallen to £179 million, 6% at final determinations. UU reduced its planned spend by over £300 million in wastewater, largely targeting significant efficiencies. We have increased our threshold by nearly £300 million too, mostly as a result of including their reduced NEP5 scheme, but also a significant allowance for Oldham and Royton. On water, a smaller gap of 10% has also closed through the company efficiencies and a £100 million partial allowance for the Thalmere link. UU now looks like all of the other water and wastewater companies. At Thames, the Tideway gap has closed completely. We have a P50 estimate of costs and a tightly defined uncertainty mechanism to protect Thames from costs that are truly outside of management control. The company's costs are now below our threshold on all three of their wholesale controls. For Bristol, at draft determination, the gap was £203 million, or 57%, and this has narrowed to only £132 million, or 32%. Through the application of the TOTEX menu, the gap to allowed expenditure falls to 19%. To reach final determinations, we've worked with Bristol and provided them with additional opportunities to make representations. We've reviewed our own approach carefully to ensure that Bristol's customers are protected, and the company will need to seek out a wide range of further efficiencies, including reviewing the scope of its investment programmes, or it is likely that its shareholders will be exposed to additional costs. Overall, PR14 has been the biggest efficiency challenge for wholesale costs, with the move from average to upper quartile efficiency delivering benefits worth £3 billion to customers. Through ODIs and TOTEX sharing, it's clear that companies will be earning their returns and managing their risks differently than how they have in previous periods. For example, in the period between 2010 and 15, companies could ask for price limits to be reopened if the economy caused bad debts to rise or if the Environment Agency increased abstraction charges. This will no longer be the case. We have set out our view on uncertainty mechanisms in our risk and reward guidance. In short, risk should remain with the company, at least in part, if it is able to influence or mitigate the impact of the effect. As a result, at final determinations, we have allowed only one notified item beyond the other mechanisms defined in the licence. There is also a very targeted mechanism for Thames Tideway. In my introduction, I talked about how we have ensured regulatory consistency by honouring the commitments made in the past. This is obviously very relevant to the adjustments that we make at PR14, to reconcile the performance of companies during the previous period from 2010 to 2015. There are two main areas of representation in response to adjustments made at DDs. all companies that were affected by serviceability shortfalls, with the exception of Severn Trent, made representations about our approach. And Severn Trent also raised a number of detailed points about our technical approach to legacy adjustments. I will turn to each of these in turn. Firstly, serviceability. At draft determination, 8 companies received serviceability shortfalls totalling $360 million. The representations we received were around the approach that we adopted, the scale of the shortfalls, and the volatility of certain indicators. We've considered these representations carefully to ensure that our approach to serviceability shortfalls is proportionate, and have done a lot of work on this since draft determination. As a result of this, for final determinations, the total shortfalls have fallen to £149 million. Second, Severn Trent made representations on our technical approach to certain PR09 adjustments, including the indexation of the CIS. Our board has decided to make no material change to the positions as at draft determination for the period from 2015 to 20 to the approach to all PR09 adjustments. We will engage with stakeholders on any reconciliation of the CIS that is appropriate to protect the long-term interests of customers from the period from 2020 onwards. There will be no retrospective application for the period from 2015 to 20. I will say a few quick words now on retail. We are looking at these price controls for the first time, but both to facilitate competition and to create real incentives to drive more efficient costs in household retail. Changes from draft determination have been generally small. The most significant is that prices now use 2013-14 as both the cost and price base. In household retail, we have made new adjustments for bad debt at Northumbria and a slightly larger adjustment for Welsh Water, and some allowance for input price pressure for Bristol, Portsmouth and Wessex, which are at the upper quartile level of efficiency. Finally, we have accepted additional new costs from a small number of companies. At final determinations, we're allowing £4 billion worth of expenditure for household retail costs. This represents a 7% reduction from what was proposed in the company's December plans, saving customers £300 million between 2015 and 20 because of our interventions and the changes made by companies. Finally, I should say a few words on serviceability. Ensuring that an efficient, notionally financed company can finance their functions is one of our key responsibilities. We focus on efficient because we would be failing in our other primary duty to protect customers if we allowed them to bear the costs of a company's inefficiency. We focus on notionally financed company because we allow companies to choose their own capital structures, but we can't allow a situation where they are protected from the decisions that they take around this. We fulfil our duty by allowing companies to receive a fair return on their capital and give them tools to manage other measures of financeability, but only where it is necessary for the notional structure to do this. We required companies to provide assurance from their boards and, in a few cases, further additional independent assurance that their plans were financeable. Post our interventions, financial ratios that we calculate at FD are similar to those at draft determination. We have allowed a limited number of companies to change their pay-as-you-go or RCV runoff rates to increase cash flows in the 2010 to 15 period. We've allowed some adjustment for Severn Trent, United Utility and South East Water on the grounds of the notionally efficient company maintaining a credit rating. Given the extent of Bristol Water's TOTEX efficiency challenge, we have exceptionally given them a short pay-as-you-go glide path by allowing them to increase revenues in 2015-16. Some other companies have proposed to use the pay-as-you-go and RCV runoff rates to smooth bills between periods. Of these, we have accepted only Yorkshire Water's. We have challenged hard for customers throughout this price review, while always taking a long-term view. We have recognised the value of stability and predictability to investors, and that this helped preserve the sector's access to low-cost financing. Because of this, customers' long-term interests are sometimes best served by decisions which do not get to the lowest possible bill levels in the very short term, and we have worked hard to strike the right balance. The price review has been delivered on schedule and with an unprecedented level of transparency. Quite simply, we have set out to do what we said we would do. In short, PR14 has set a solid foundation on which to build for the future for PR19. The Water Act means that we will need to make changes in order to enable upstream reform and to drive forward our better target regulation. Importantly, we will need to return to questions about the allocation of the RCV, and this will be the subject of conversations in the next year or so. I hope that this year has given you confidence that we will approach all of these changes in a deliberate, transparent and balanced way. We now have time to take any questions that you may have.
Thank you. If you'd like to ask a question at this time, please press the star or asterisk key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone. Please ensure that the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. If you find that your question has already been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. Again, please press star 1 to ask a question. We'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone to signal. We will now take our first question from Jamie Tuniscal of Redburn.
Yes, hello, it's Jamie Tuniscal. Three questions, please. Just looking at the FFO to debt figure that you show in the detail, is that done on exactly the same basis as S&P? And if not, is it likely to be higher or lower than their approach would imply? The second question is just on those pay-as-you-go adjustments. You seem to have basically allowed more for UU in terms of what they were asking for in the post-draft discussions than for Severn Trent. I just wanted to check that's right, and if you could just explain the basis for that. Was that better customer engagement? And the third question is just whether you could help me with the natural rates of, OPEX and IRE versus TOTEX against the pay-as-you-go rates that are actually quoted for both UUs and Severn Trent. Thank you.
Okay, thanks ever so much, Jamie. I think that I will start off and then I will hand across to Graham to pick up on the last point. I think the first thing to say is that our calculations of FFO to debt, we hope, are really clear that these are our calculations. We're not attempting in any way to replicate the calculations that are used by any of the rating agency, and they are designed for us to make sure that we meet our responsibilities that I outlined around allowing an efficient company to finance their functions. We have done some work looking at how the S&P ratio would translate across for the companies. And I can say that we've taken exactly the same approach to UU and to Severn Trent in the way in which we have done that. So the basis of the calculation is exactly the same. It does result in different revenues being moved between the periods for the two companies, but the basis of the calculations is exactly the same for the two. Graham, do you want to pick up on the natural rate?
Yes, Jamie, with respect to your question about getting the information you need to calculate the natural rate. That isn't the concept that that we really subscribe to. There is no natural level for pay-as-you-go. That said, if what you're looking for is information on accounting, CapEx and OpEx, the financial models will be published by the end of the day today, probably, and you'll be able to get the information you're probably looking for in there.
Can I just check on my second question was about the pay-as-you-go adjustments. So that hasn't been picked up. And then just coming back on the first one, seeing you've had a go at, I know I can totally understand you have your own calculation and it's consistent across all the companies and that's only, you know, right and proper. But you also suggested you have thought about how the S&P number would be calculated and, you know, generally then is your number coming out slightly better or slightly worse? Is there a general trend you find of your calculation versus the S&P, given how important?
I guess, Jamie, I would say that it's not really for me to second-guess how S&P are going to view these issues, because they look at a wide range of factors that we don't look into. But equally, we take account of other factors that they don't take account of. I guess one of the important ones is around index-linked debt, and I think that you can work out for yourself the way in which that would impact on the calculations.
Okay, so you're not really sure how your number compares to theirs. Thanks. Okay. And the other question, Graham or Sonia, in terms of the second question I asked about the pay-as-you-go adjustments and what the companies were asking for.
Yeah, so, sorry, and I'll try again to answer it. We have calculated that on exactly the same basis between United Utilities and Severn Trent. It does have different consequences for both of the companies, but both of the companies have stated that they were looking to target a FFO to debt number which was in the 9 to 10 range. We have targeted that number for the notionally efficient company pre-legacy within that range.
Okay. Thanks.
Our next question comes from Guy McKenzie of Credit Suisse.
Good morning. Three questions from me as well. Firstly, specifically on United Utilities, I mean, it looks like you've increased the wholesale TOTEX allowance by about $200 million relative to the draft. I was just wondering, when you talk about the gap being narrowed to about $179 million, are you talking about the gap between UU's most recent proposal and Ofwat's baseline, which I guess is the basis for the sort of $628 million gap that we had coming into this, or is that the gap between the actual allowance based on that 75-25 Ofwat slash company proposal split, so a lower optical gap, but obviously offset by the additional menu income or cost. Secondly, I'm not sure I'm reading this right, but just reading off the bar charts, it looks like you've tweaked down the incentive ranges, at least for Severn Trent and UU, from, down to about, I guess, 0.8 to 9.1% on equity returns for Severn Trent, 1.4 to 7.9 for UU. Just to clarify if that's indeed the case, and if so, what was driving that. And a final question, Sonia, you mentioned at the very end there that you'd be revisiting conversations about allocation of the RCV next year, I guess as you look towards facilitating more trading and upstream competition. I was just wondering if you'd give us a bit more detail on that, at least on specifics of timing, and also whether that would also be a time where you'd be revisiting the question on CPI versus RPI for the next AMP.
Okay, thanks so much, Guy. I think overall the position in UU is the baseline levels, and then in addition to that, there's obviously the menus that come over the top of that. As we set out, that basically where we are with UU is that on the wastewater side, and the way in which I would describe it is that we've reached a position where all of the enhancement expenditure we think has been addressed, so things like their national environmental program, and the gap really remains around their base level of TOTEX, which I know that they've talked to you about on a number of occasions. I think that the change that you've picked up with regards to 7 Trent and QU is because we've taken non-household retail out of all of the numbers there. So I think that that's the change that you're identifying. The third thing on our future conversations, we're really, really excited about having these conversations, being really open with all of our stakeholders. Our forward work programme is going to be coming out shortly, and that will set out our programme of activity over the next 12 months. But what I can assure you of is that we are looking to have the conversation very early about what the scope of what we're going to be considering in PR19 will be, in part to learn lessons from this review process and make sure that we get those conversations up and running as quickly as possible.
Okay. Can I ask maybe one follow-up question on that? I mean, you sort of committed before to grandfathering or securing the 2015 RCV. Does that mean that if you were to, say, move, break up the RCV to a certain extent, that some of the expenditure that's been allowed today that's going into the RCV could potentially be taken out and moved into a competitive segment? I guess I'm just looking to understand a little bit further what really we're looking at here.
I think that the commitment that we made was absolutely up until 2015. That means that any additions to the RCV from 2015 onwards could be reallocated. I think that there's just a difference in language here that I think is really quite important. We're talking about how the RCV could be reallocated. You've seen us do that, this price review between retail, and I know that retail is much smaller in terms of the impact of that within the RCV, but you have seen us take that approach during this price review of reallocating RCV, and I think that that's the conversation that we want to have.
Okay, so that's just reallocating within, say, a regulated framework where you maintain that link to RPI.
Well,
and then I guess the final part of that question was whether the RPI link would be revisited as well.
And I think that, as I've said before, the question as to whether the appropriate index is CPI or RPI is definitely within the scope of questions that we want to ask ourselves as we start to think through what might be the right answer for PR19. But I guess that there's a very long list of those questions. You know, we're going to want to return to questions like, you know, should debt be indexed? There's a whole list of things where we're going to want to have those conversations with you all over the next 12 to 18 months.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question comes from James Brand of Deutsche Bank.
Good morning and congratulations. Two questions, please. Firstly, just in terms of the politics and kind of how you've gone about the review process, I was wondering whether how it's kind of worked in terms of the interaction with politicians. Have you kind of already got political sign-off on these proposals from the main parties, or have you seen obviously you're an independent regulator, maybe you haven't consulted them with them much, but I was just wondering how that kind of process has gone and whether or not that you feel that there is support for these proposals from the main political parties. And the second question is just on mergers. You've kind of flagged up earlier in the year that you would be open to companies coming and talking to you about mergers. I presume that you've obviously, the main focus over the last few months has been on the getting the review out of the way, but I was wondering if you could just tell us whether any, obviously I wouldn't expect you to name names, but whether any companies have approached you about mergers, and if you could give an update on how you might think about mergers, if it's something you're still open about, whether you've kind of developed your thoughts in that area. Thank you.
Okay, thanks so much, James. And I'm going to hand over to Johnson on the first question.
So, good morning. On the political question, absolutely no discussions take place. And I think you know this regime is independent for very good reasons of political guidance on the regime. And politicians learnt of the outcome of this review at the same time you did this morning at 7 a.m. and they were published. And that's obviously the way we conduct this review, because we are charged to do so independently, and I think that's what gives investors and all others, you know, confidence that it is independent. So I hope that answers that question for you. On the On the merger rating, we've been rather obsessed by getting this review out. So apart from a few comments I made at a Utility Week event last week, this is an issue we'll return back to in the new year. But clearly the sort of changes going on in the sector open the way to thinking differently about how the how the industry is vertically integrated or not. And the one thing we did very clearly flag was big is not better, as you can see if you look at our efficiency ratings. What we are interested in is questions like, is it right that a retail business is with a wholesale? That's for companies to think about, and we'll look forward to hearing proposals from them.
I guess the only additional build that I would just put onto Johnson's really helpful comments is that the government is consulting on retail exits for the non-household side of the sector, and I guess that's an important component of realising some of those changes that Johnson has just outlined.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks, James.
Our next question comes from Dominic Nash of Macquarie.
Yes, good morning. A couple of questions, please. Firstly, on ODIs, is it possible to give some colour on what proportion of the ODI out or underperformance will come through as cash within the review and what proportion comes through out of true-up at the end of the review? And I think that it differs between companies, so obviously the three that we're most interested in you can probably focus on. And secondly, on TOTEX and ODIs and outperformance regimes. TOTEX, I understand, is going to be completely trued up in 2020. Have you been looking at the impact on your earnings under IFRS with this sort of shifting around of revenues and costs between 2015 and 2020 and then the potential true-up going into the next review? And have you been doing any consultation alongside the FTSE accounting board is potentially looking at tweaking IFRS changes for accounting for regulatory assets, whether or not you've spoken to them, and I presume whether or not the water companies will be reporting on a sort of a trued up basis on their returns as they go forward?
I'm going to try to answer the first question, and I'm going to pass over to Keith to pick up the second, if that's okay. Dominic, as you're absolutely right, the situation differs between the three listed companies that you're interested in. Seven Trent and Southwest Water have license changes that are part of the package going out today, which will enable them to earn some rewards on the appropriate ODIs within the period. That isn't the case for United Utilities. And so United Utilities will true up their position on ODIs at the end of the period.
And do we have the sort of rough proportions, or is that in the detail?
It's in the detail, and there is a list of the ODIs that are covered by the licence, and so they're generally things that customers care about on a more annualised basis and things being longer term. So that's all set out in the document, but I'm sure that the companies have worked out for themselves what they think the financials are associated with that.
Mm-hmm.
Keith, do you want to pick up on the second question?
Yes. We did put out a consultation paper at the end of September on updating the regulatory accounts, but also trying to take account of reporting in respect of the price review. We received quite a few comments on that, and we're finalising those comments and putting out a final response probably towards the end of January, early February. But you're right to say IFRS doesn't give you a true picture, and we did consult on the idea of having regulatory reporting on the basis under which, the economic basis under which the price review has been set. So the impacts of better performance or worse performance on TOTEX ought to be shown through the regulatory accounting statements as we go forward. And your final point, Dominic, yes, you have been contacted by the ASB. I think they're just looking to update an accounting for regulated companies paper they put out about 7 or 8 years ago. So I don't think it's anything particularly special, this change for regulated businesses. But really the big difference is IFRS between economic accounting, which is quite a bit different.
Okay,
And so when you do your FFO net debt numbers and your ACICR numbers, do you think that the credit rating agencies will also be looking at this sort of cash flow issue versus economic issue, or do you think they'll be they'll be able to factor in these differences?
I think they will. The rating agencies were quite pleased that we were looking to report actual performance on the basis that the price review was set, as opposed to just trying to decipher it from the statutory account. So I think they'd be quite supportive of it, yes.
Right, thank you.
As a reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Our next question comes from Philip Matton of Santander.
Hi there. In relation to the cost of debt, can you say that with confidence that if there was an equal and opposite move in market conditions, an increase in WACC would have been announced today as opposed to a decrease? And secondly, given the materiality of the impact of these moves, would you consider a more prescriptive methodology for the next price review to allow companies to better quantify and manage their financial risks?
Okay. Thanks very much, Philip. I think the first thing to say on the cost of debt, I can answer that absolutely. If we'd have seen the markets move in a different direction, then it would have been the right thing to do for customers to have changed the cost of capital upwards. That clearly isn't the case, and the evidence points in the opposite direction as I set out. And as I also set out, there are important both evidence and regulatory precedents on the cost of equity side that have changed since January, but we have chosen to stick with the position on the cost of equity. As to the second point on a more prescriptive approach for the future, I'm not sure how I'd square that with being in customers' interests. I think that we gave really early and good guidance on the cost of capital. I think that has really helped all of the stakeholders in understanding their plans. And I know that every single company has been working off of scenarios associated with what the cost of capital was likely to be at this point, because obviously we clearly flagged and signalled that this is something that we were looking at post-August.
Thank you.
As a final reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. We'll now take a question from Verity Mitchell of HSBC.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my question. Just a clarificatory question on ODIs. You mentioned that Selmia is outside the cap. Did you say one of the 7 Trent schemes were? I didn't quite catch that. Was Elan Valley or was it another scheme with another company? And secondly, when you thought about changing or reducing drastically the price reopeners, you didn't mentally give any compensatory risk allowance on the positive side of the companies, because it strikes me that that's quite new in terms of radically reducing the number of price reopeners in this review. Or did you feel that you had already accommodated that additional risk in the rest of your considerations on returns?
Yeah, thanks so, so much, Verity. I think that you've answered your own question on the second one. The position that we set out on uncertainty mechanisms was part of the risk and reward guidance when we established the original 3.85 appointee level WACC. So we did think hard about the risk allowance associated with it. And the way in which I describe it is it's an all-in based return. And that's really important in protecting customers. On your first question, with regards to the ODIs, all major projects sit outside of the collar, because there is no shortfalling for PR19 for the non-delivery of capital schemes. And so that means that UU for Thelmere has a ODI. It also has other ODIs around other major projects that it will be delivering within the period. And Severn Trent has the one that I outlined for the Eland Valley, and again also has other ones that would sit outside of those collars.
So that's the reason as to why they sit outside, is that there's no shortfalling in the future.
Great, thank you. That's helpful.
As there are no further questions at this time, I'd like to hand the call back to the speakers for any additional or closing remarks.
Okay, Johnson, again, I think it's probably time to close this. Thank you. We'll look forward to seeing how this is all assessed by you. But thank you for joining us this morning, and I'll say goodbye for now.
Thank you.
That will conclude today's conference call. Thank you for your participation, ladies and gentlemen. You may now disconnect.